Season 4 of Sail GP returns to Lyttelton Harbour this month. Those fast foiling boats compete around the world these days, as you may know, and New Zealand's currently coming second, with our boat in the ever more than capable hands of Peter Burling and Blair Tuke, 7 times world champions, Olympic gold medalists in the 49er class, and America's Cup winners as well, Volvo Ocean racers too. And they're choosing a sailing song for us this morning. We have one of them to talk to, hopefully both of them at some point. Blair Tuke, good morning. Good to be able to chat with you.
Morning, Jim. Yeah, great to chat too.
This is F1 on the water, isn't it? I mean, I know why Formula One on the land can't do what you do and have every car identical like your F50 boats, but gee, it would certainly tell us who exactly the best drivers in the world are, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing sport to be involved with, or this style of racing. First time ever been done in sailing like this. F50 catamarans are all exactly the same. Best sailors in the world are doing the league. We've had some amazing venues. So we're loving it. I think this Christchurch is going to be the 9th stop this season. Pretty excited to get home.
We see the glamour of big money land racing on Drive to Survive. I imagine Sail GP is at a simpler stage in its evolution. I'm just floating this idea. The hotels might not all be 5-star. Can you give us an idea of the lifestyle?
Yeah, definitely not all 5-star hotels. Very much in a big growth phase. It's like a startup business, really. Obviously, 4 years in now, but the growth's been pretty phenomenal. The league's here to for the long run, really.
Yeah.
So with that, it's not just throwing money at it, starting up and running the business as you would any startup, trying to be as efficient as possible. But the growth with that, both from a broadcast point of view, fans, all of that is pretty phenomenal. So it's exciting to be part of.
Yeah, you can tell it's here for the long run. It's got, constant evolution all over it, written all over it, really. When you both started sailing, and that's not long ago, you're both young men, could you ever have envisaged being on a boat, Blair, that could do 100 k's an hour?
When I first started on my P-class in Kirikiri, no, I don't think so. It's so great for our sport, for young people coming through, that this type of sailing has evolved, and also all the spin-offs off that. You need to go down to the local beach now to see people wing foiling on the foil boards and the surf. It's pretty amazing, really.
Yeah, I know, glamour attracts, doesn't it? And you're the heroes. The two of you have obviously always got on. I mean, I'd as a landlubber, I would think it'd be impossible to function that well out there if you didn't. You seem like you're still besties.
Yeah, we are. It's been an awesome partnership, Pete and I. Friendship, partnership. 15 years now, Jim, I think. So it's pretty, awesome, really. We started sailing when Pete was 17, I was 19. And, we're still got a lot of things we want to achieve and do together. So it's pretty awesome, I think.
I'm reading from the latest publicity email for the round in Christchurch, Blair. Burling is known for his cool, quiet demeanour and ability to remain calm. Tuke was once described by his Olympic coach as the most socially astute person he has ever come across. But Blair, being socially astute isn't much of an attribute out there on the water, I would think.
It doesn't help you too much out there. Hope he would have said something as well, as that can make a boat go fast as well.
So you control the sails, you control the speed. Do you ever disagree, or are those, is your role completely, delineated? You know what you're doing, you do it.
Oh, so on the boat, yeah, Pete's the final decision maker. He's a tactician and the helmsman. And then my role is predominantly try and make the boat go as fast as we can. Andy Maloney, who's the flight controller, plays a really important role in that too. Liv Mackay is a strategist. She's really helping Pete out as his second set of eyes, looking where the wind is on the water for us. So everyone's got their important roles. And then, it's just about sticking to those, really. And, there's times you might not agree, but you'll work through those post-racing or in the evenings. everyone on the boat wants to get the best out of it. You're trying to achieve the same thing. Everyone's very driven to improve themselves and it, as a group. So with that comes, you know, a lot of respect and honesty as to, you know, trying to do that as a unit, really.
Yeah, I can imagine that. You're placed second at the moment. New Zealand kind of expects the two of you to be better than anyone else. No pressure. Can you retake the lead?
That's the plan, Jim. We were closing in on them until the weekend in Sydney where they managed to win and we finished third. Obviously, that was without Pete, with Nathan filling in the helm position role. And we really let that one slip, so we were quite disappointed in the final race. But the great thing about SailGP, or the interesting thing, is that it all comes down to one race at the end. So the top three boats after the regular season, after you know racing all around the world, the final happens in San Francisco, and the three teams at the top go into a winner-takes-all final. So that's really the ultimate goal, is just to be there as one of the three boats and best prepared to try and take on that race and win.
But also not to be too comfortable along the way, thinking, oh yeah, we're going to make the top three, and then all of a sudden mishaps occur or unforeseens arrive, and all of a sudden you find you're struggling for the third place. Yeah, that would be the nightmare, wouldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. The points you get deducted for when the boats come together are very severe. So that could set you back 8-10 points just like that. So we try and make sure we don't do that.
Just a question about that. Sometimes you seem to sail magnificently. You know, this is a question from someone who doesn't know sailing, who just, you know, piloted the rescue inflatable when our children were learning. But sometimes, that was Dad's role. Sometimes we see, you know, sheer brilliance and we can tell it's, you know, you're sailing great. And sometimes you're part of a procession like everybody else going around and not necessarily out in front. So what makes that difference, if you wouldn't mind explaining that?
Well, I think obviously the conditions change in sailing a lot. The windier it is normally, in general, the more spread out the boats go or the more opportunities you have to pass. In some conditions, and especially in the light winds, the start becomes very important, you know, and that's where we've been caught up in the past where, if you're not getting the boat off the start line in that front row or in the front few, you end up fighting in the pack. And it's incredibly hard to get past no matter how well you're sailing the boat. So, hey, Jim, I've just seen from Pete that he's on the link if you want to try let him in.
Peter, you've joined us, I think. Good morning.
Yeah, g'day, mate. Sorry about that. Got my timing's a bit wrong.
Oh, no problem at all. That's nice. Well, Blair's been filling in for you very ably. In fact, I found out a lot of interesting stuff, particularly Blair's importance on the boat. No, I'm just joking. Now, you're just in time for me to ask about your Live Ocean Foundation. What have you got planned for that over the next little while? Because you both grew up near water, you know, in the far north and the Bay of Plenty, and the Volvo, as I understand it, the Volvo Ocean Race crystallized your ambitions, you know, to help save the sea from us and what we do. Is that how it went?
Yeah, it started off with a real love for being out on the ocean, whether it's, you know, swimming, surfing, diving. For a sport, we both sail, so we spend a whole heap of time out there with that. And then I think the ocean race was a real catalyst in terms of just how small this planet we live on is, and how interconnected everything is, especially by the ocean. After that, we came back to NZ and, you know, really wanted to do something. I started out the journey with definitely not the ambition of starting a charity, but found this massive hole in the ocean space in New Zealand. You know, I mean, not many people know we have the fourth largest ocean space in the world, with 94% of our country by area is ocean as well. So we have this amazing opportunity to have a huge impact on the global stage. There's so many people doing amazing things with, you know, very minimal visibility and funds. So, you know, a lot of our projects, we get behind, you know, existing projects or bits of research that are going on. If you take a look at, you know, our first project we got behind was around supporting the Antipodean albatross, and that's a species of native birds to New Zealand that's just in free fall to extinction, going after baits and then drowning on hooks and surface longlining. And yeah, it's just the disparity between, what's happens on land to on ocean. It's a bit that really gets me at times. If you were taking the cows into the milking shed and stumbling over kiwis and things like that, then every New Zealander would be absolutely outraged where you can, catch however many on a surface longline set and having tippity an albatross and have no issues at all. So there's just little things like that. There's we've got really behind the southern right whale, which is actually a really positive story. The whale has a huge role to play in terms of climate with phytoplankton and bringing nutrients up from deep. So yeah, there's I just encourage anyone to get on the website, check it out. It's an amazing amount of work, but great things happening.
Yeah, there's a lot of fascinating stuff on your website, Live O Ocean Foundation. We're talking with Peter Burling and Blair Tuke. I get the feeling that if I asked both of you what superpower you'd like, you'd probably say gills, because your love for the water, Blair, isn't just on top of the water, is it?
No, it's for sure. We're lucky to have a profession that lets us be on the ocean as much as we do, but we're equally enjoy getting out there as we did when we were kids and just mucking around on the ocean and enjoying that time with friends and family, getting under the surface, understanding, all of that, and what it does for us. Sitting on land and looking out, it's really hard to understand the beauty and the complexity of what's happening below it. But it's so critically important for us to have a healthy future and really trying to push to change people's attitudes and for more people to be able to connect with the ocean and understand what it does for us.
Now back to the racing. No more Jimmy Spittle. What will you do now for a villain? Because heroes need villains.
Yeah, gonna miss him. So Ben Ainslie's not racing SailGP anymore. So a lot of experience left in a pretty short succession. But obviously that opens the door for new people to step up, which is pretty exciting too.
Peter, we were talking to Blair in your absence about the evolution of SailGP, and I won't go over all that again. But in the world of the future, with climate change in mind, will we see big craft flying, sailing across the oceans on foils? Outside the racing, how will this develop, do you think?
Well, I think that's the really cool thing about sport is that it's powered by nature, it's powered by wind, and that technology, although it seems far-fetched at the moment, does eventually trickle down into other areas.
Now, I can't keep you all day. We asked you for a song, actually, and we often do this with top sports people. You wouldn't ever have earbuds in out on the water, maybe when you're practicing, would you? What would your You can't really do that when you're sailing, or can you?
We'd actually run comm systems normally, so you don't have an earbud in, but you've got an earmuff over the top and a boom mic out in front of you. But it's just so loud where we are, and you end up with your head in, 100 km an hour of wind or something. So it's if someone's half a meter away from you, it's virtually impossible to talk to them. So we don't end up listening to music, but it's generally because there's a kind of constant flow of information around the boat, just trying to make sure everyone's on the same page, trying to do the same thing. And that's something that takes an incredible amount of work for everyone on board to get that communication stream flowing really nicely.
That's right. You're not saying, "Hey, have you heard this from Taylor Swift?" No, I understand. So what song have you come up with for us, please? Whichever of you would like to do the honours.
Sloop John B by the Beach Boys, please, Jim. I used to listen to the Beach Boys through parents and friends, etc., when I was younger, and then just rediscovered the song a couple of years ago and quite enjoy it. So, yeah.
A lot
I
of
wasn't
people.
sure if I was definitely meant to get a sailing song, but I thought I'd give you one.
No, it's great. No, a sailing song is perfect. Hey, great to talk to both of you. I know you're busy. I'll let you go, but exciting to have a chat, and thank you for being able to join us.
Thanks so
All
much.
right, thanks very much. Thanks, Jim. Great to chat.